Another week, another great episode of What Do You Know With Joe is upon us. Let's get to that intro and the ad just for this week.
Sit down and chop it up. Let's talk about it.
Well, let's ask the right question.
Who's convinced?
We're starting to see the mind frame stuff now.
It's What Do You Know With Joe? Hello, everyone, and welcome to another great episode of What Do You Know With Joe. As always, we've got Baxter. We've got Winnie. Lindsay's teaching at Guilford, crushing it, almost done with the year, 2 days before summer vacation. Things are going great. We're excited for this week. Hope everyone had a chance to tune in last week to JD and Kai's episode. If you haven't, go check it out. It was a lot of fun. We had a lot of great conversations. Definitely go check it out. Those guys are doing great things. I'm very excited about this week's episode as well. We have the great honorable Ruffin McNeil. For those who don't know, Ruffin McNeil is a football coach, an educator, a father, a grandfather, and many other great things. I had the privilege and honor to speak with him about a lot of different topics, and it was amazing to watch him be a coach while I was at school. He, you know, did great things like wiping the floor with UNC in Dowdy-Ficklin. Those of you, don't forget, we put up 70 on him. And then also doing things like, you know, keeping the composure to go into a place like Lane Stadium and take down the Hokies after they're off a freshman off number one Ohio State. He did great things while he's at East Carolina. I was excited, but he did other great things too. He was, with Mike Leach and that Texas Tech team, back in the early 2000s, with Michael Crabtree. After his time at East Carolina, he was with Bronco Mendenhall at UVA. He was able to reconnect with, and be a coach. All this is coaching. And then he was able to reconnect with Lincoln Riley from the East Carolina days at Oklahoma, being a defensive coordinator. And now he's with Dave Doran at NC State. So he's been doing at a lot of different institutions. He was at a lot before. You'll hear that in the episode. But he's, you know, been at a lot of great institutions, coached a lot of good young men, and, developed a lot of good young men into the stars that they are, into the NFL, or, you know, to be in whatever profession they're in now. You get to hear a lot of cool stories about what Coach, you know, has gone through and who he knows and, you know, what he has as his values and his core, you know, values that he brought to all the, you know, not only teams and programs that he was a part of, but what he would try to instill in his players. And, you know, that's really cool. Some of the conversations we have are really cool. And then, you know, one of the things he mentioned that I'm still actually trying to do is part of the conversation we got to talk to, he was like, I would love for you to, you know, have conversations with, you know, former players of mine, and, you know, just hear their stories. And so I encourage any former player of Ruffin's, if you hear this, definitely feel free to reach out, you know, or, you know, let's talk more. I'd love to continue to hear these morals and these values and hear, you know, how maybe you're instilling them or, you know, keeping them up. But we're not going to talk anymore. We're going to let everyone hear the great episode. It is awesome. Can't wait for everyone to get a chance to listen. There's going to be no post pod this week. Next week's episode is going to be another banger. You're going to love it, but, definitely tune in and listen. But for now, let's definitely get to everyone's, you know, anticipated and long awaited, interview with Coach Ruffin McNeil. Here we go.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the What You Know With Joe Show. I have a great guest, Coach Ruffin McNeil, and he's, for those of you who don't know, Coach Ruffin is a football coach for right now NC State. However, he has coached in many universities, including my former alma mater, where he was the head coach, East Carolina University. But Coach Ruffin, thank you so much for joining me.
Same here. Glad to be here, Joseph.
Yeah. So we're kind of jumped right into it. I have so many questions about football as well as, you know, growing up and, you know, just questions about life. But we'll get started kind of with the football aspect first because I have so many questions. But how did you kind of get into football growing up? Was it the sport that you definitely knew you wanted to play, or was it actually one of the sports you were like, I don't know if I really knew anything about it?
Well, I'm from Lumberton, North Carolina, and my neighborhood was a very athletic neighborhood growing up. Okay. We had two first-round draft choices, the NFL off my street, pro baseball player draft, so we played all three sports growing up. It was something we did. It was football, basketball, and baseball year-round. And then later on in track, I laid on in high school, I took off the track, but my dad was a coach. So I really played all three, all through high school, track, sub for baseball. But football was always one that I've enjoyed, played when I was very young. I thought my dad and the neighborhood environment, because we were so athletic, athletically minded, parents and kids were always participating in sports. So it was a neighborhood and my household, with my dad being a coach.
Yeah. No, I kind of had something to say. My dad was a coach, so we were doing all kinds of sports. So, and it sounds kind of like, you know, you had, like you said, so many different kind of athletes around you that were high caliber. When did you maybe realize in either one sport or multiple that you maybe had something a little bit different or a little bit more that you could take to the next level?
I think one year it was in recreation ball. I won the all-around athlete for the year.
Okay.
And around the seventh grade or eighth grade, and I started growing, really grew my height. I was like 5'11" and the and seventh, eighth grade. And I felt like I had and the people in the neighborhood and schools, coaches thought I had enough talent to participate in school sports. And again, all three. So it took off from there.
Gotcha. And so in high school, did you play? You were three sport. What were your top sports in high school? Probably ranked, would football be number one?
Basketball.
Okay.
Gotcha. Yeah, basketball was way ahead of football. I was really getting ready to play basketball and focus on basketball. But again, like in North Carolina, what I learned later in coaching, most at that time, most athletes play all sports, all three sports. So, but basketball was one that I felt probably was a little bit ahead of. And football, I still was able to run and do those things. But basketball probably number one, football two, track three.
Okay. So, I mean, you went to play football at ECU. Were you getting, you know, offers for other schools for football, but also with basketball? Were you looking to go play at the next level for basketball too, or just were you focused at football maybe towards the end of your high school career?
Well, I got basketball offers, and then later in football, my senior year, I had a really good year, and offers started pouring in from around the country, and I had a really good high school coach move in there my senior year, and my tape got out, and really – the first one that offered me was East Carolina. The tape got out, well, South Carolina, excuse me, was the first, but East Carolina was right after that. And after Coach Dye offered me, Pat Dye, then it really upped the recruiting process.
Yeah, and for people that don't know, I mean, Pat Dye was the coach for like Bo Jackson at Auburn, and you know, he's a pretty well known coach. Was he the one that basically sealed the deal for you? That was, you know, hey, this is why I'm going to come to East Carolina.
Yeah, the late Pat died. As you know, he passed away. But Pat was a father to all of us, like a father figure. And he had just left Bear Bryant's football staff and took over East Carolina as the head coach in 75. So when Coach came in the house, he had that down-to-earth mentality about him and personality and got my mom and dad. And from that point on, it was the only place that my mom and dad really wanted me to go. We shut off recruiting pretty much after that. But I had a lot of schools try to come in after that. But my mom and dad, once we gave them my word, I was shut down. And that's why I attended.
Parents always looking out, definitely. So what was it, just a little bit, what was it like playing for Coach Pat Dye? I mean, he was a great coach. Like you said, he had a great family mentality. What was it, you know, like playing for him?
We were the most well-conditioned team in the country. we had 3-a-day practices, tough, fundamentally sound. We were a wishbone offense.
Okay.
And what we call a 3-4 defense now at that time. We were a team that relied on speed quite a bit. We were a very fast football team, so. Coach Dye was a very tough, hard-nosed coach, but he loved us, each man on our football team. And I patterned a lot of it, my coaching style, after my dad and also Coach Dye.
Understandable. Totally understand that. And so when you're playing for Coach and, you know, you guys had a great team, a couple of great seasons with Coach, when did you start, you know, noticing that? Did you did you have thoughts, you know, similarly, maybe back in like with high school, did you have thoughts of maybe I could go professional to the NFL and play the next level, or go to, you know, another league that is professional, or were you trying to maybe stick to a coaching route?
Well, of course, we had dreams of the NFL, and I thought I had the size at that time. Mm-hmm. The defensive back, I ran a really good 40 time at 4.5, but right after my senior year, after my senior year, Coach Dye left East Carolina and went to Wyoming for a year or season, and then to Auburn. Well, once he left, a new coach came in, Ed Emery, who didn't really know any of us. And at that time, it's not like now, where pro scouts know who's there and that type of thing. So when Coach Dye left, I sort of just, my focus went to now being a teacher, which my mom and dad were, and I began coaching high school football after my 4 years.
Gotcha. And it's cool to hear that you're, well, I know you're a teacher, but it's cool to hear that your parents were, my wife is a teacher as well. So I try to, you know, educators definitely, I think, you know best, and definitely.
Well,
try to give
not only my mom, dad, my uncles, aunts, all talk, my daughter, wife teaches. So, we have a teaching family. Our home that I grew up in was a boarding home for teachers back, during segregation. That we boarded teachers from the north that lived with us. And so education was a big part of our lives. And when I finished playing, teaching was a normal fit. So I began teaching at my high school. Like I attended. Mm-hmm. And it goes on from there.
Yeah. And you got your master's, correct?
Once I coached 5 years at Lemon High School, I got my master's from Clemson University. And that's when I started the college track then.
Gotcha. And so did you, I may have been a wrong stat of information. Did you go down the college director here? Did you have any coaching experience in the NFL with any teams, or did you do anything? Was it all strictly college, or did you do any coaching with the NFL too?
Yeah, I did an internship with the Miami Dolphins.
Okay.
That was after some years in college, I worked, let's see, Clemson was 85 to 87, 86, 87 was Austin Peay State, 88 was North Alabama, 89 and to 90, 89, 90, 91 was Appalachian, 92 was East Carolina, then 93 and 92 through 94, 5 and 6, I was back at App. I did an internship with the Dolphins at that time. And then the rest of the time, I've interviewed for NFL jobs once, the Rams, when they were in St. Louis. But I just felt at home in the college level.
Gotcha. Understandable. And so sticking on that topic, how did you stumble upon, you know, Coach Leach and the team in Lubbock in Texas Tech?
Just connections. At that time, Coach – Leach, we knew each other from, you know, the coaching tree, the coaching fraternity. He was at Valdosta State.
Okay.
And he went to Kentucky with Coach Mummy, Oklahoma with Coach Stoops, had a great year, got a job at Tech. This firm wanted to help put the staff together, the top D-line, O-line coaches in the country. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I coached linebackers, and I was the one that we knew each other, and I coached linebackers, so that's how I arrived there in 2000.
Yeah, that was when I first learned about you, because that was when – it might have been towards the end of the career, but you guys played UVA in the Gator Bowl, I believe.
Yes.
And so my brother went to UVA, and he was there during that time. So I watched that game, and, I mean, I think – I don't honestly remember that. Did you guys win that game?
Yeah, we won that game. They had a great team. UVA did, and we had –
Chris Long's here, yeah.
We had a great – we had a pretty good team, too. Michael Crabtree Graham Harrell, and I was defensive coordinator at that time.
What was it like coaching against Michael Crabtree in practice?
Yeah. It was hard. You know, he was just like everybody else that tried to guard him. UVA double teamed that day, and he still caught passes. Texas, you know, it speaks for itself. You know, Michael was a great athlete in high school, similar to my track. He's a great basketball player.
Yeah,
and. Really. Okay. At Dallas, Cyber Clip. Was a great quarterback in high school. Mm-hmm. And once he got to Texas Tech, he moved to wide receiver and became the Heisman candidate and Biletnikoff Award winner 2 years in a row and later NFL starter.
Mm-hmm. So how does that, as a defensive coach, I mean, having a star like that on the other side, how does that, you know, make your defense a little bit better? Or how do you, you know, utilize him on the, even though he's on the other side, to maybe your defensive advantage, maybe in practice to help your DBs and, you know, your defense?
Well, anytime you get, you can, competition brings the best out of everyone, you know, iron sharpens iron. Mm. And if you have a particular coverage you're playing and you use it against a top athlete like a Michael Crabtree, for example, or, mm-hmm. or maybe even an offensive lineman, sometimes it teaches you to adjust a little bit. So Michael taught us about soundness and of coverage and on the back end, and we made sure we were able to he exploited anything that was not well. Mm-hmm. So it helped both sides. Mm-hmm. And we helped him as well.
I get that. Yeah, for sure. I bet. So how did, you know, especially from Texas Tech, how did you hear about the, I'm sure connections, but how did you hear about the East Carolina job opening? And, you know, what was it definitely something that you were, was eye opening? You were like, oh, I want to go after that job.
No, not really. Not really. I was at Texas Tech and I mm-hmm. took over for Mike Leach in a bowl game and, mm-hmm. We won the game and I thought I would get that job.
Right.
And I didn't get that one. So I had accepted a job at Stanford.
Oh, cool. Okay.
I was going with Jim Harbaugh. And on the flight back, Terry Holland and the staff called, and Skip had just left to go to South Florida. And they had, mm-hmm. and they had an opening then. That's how I found out about it. They called, and then I just, again, called them, let them know if they're serious, call me back. If they were not, then I'm okay with it. I didn't need to be a token interview. Mm-hmm. And Coach called back and said, we're serious. And that's when the interview process started. And that's when I became a candidate for East Carolina once they called.
Nice. And who else was, if you can, was it a highly touted job? Were there a bunch of candidates, or was it really just, you know, only like a handful, maybe like two or three?
I can't answer that one. I can't answer that. I don't.
No worries.
I'm not
no
sure. I wasn't worried about anyone else. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there were a lot of candidates that wanted the job. I think Skip had just won back-to-back championships there. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure who the candidates were.
Gotcha. No worries. And so you get to be the head coach of your former alma mater, which is awesome. You've had plenty of talented squads there. What did you want to build your program around? What were some of the key and core values that you wanted your players to maybe adhere by and, you know, you wanted your program to be about?
Well, we were not going to microwave the program. We were going to build it brick by brick.
Nice.
And it was going to be built for the long haul. Number two, I was not going to be looking Louie. I would have stayed at East Carolina as long as they would have me and as long as we did the job. Mm-hmm. Three, most importantly, we're going to build it on three non-negotiable items: trust, commitment, and caring. And I wanted the staff to be that way, the players who recruited to be that way, and I thought we had success with those values.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, there was a ton of success. You guys had plenty of bowl wins. You had a ton of great, you know, arguably one of the best wide receivers of all time in college football. Both, I mean, you could say both Justin Hardy and Zay Jones, but you guys had talent left and right. So, you know, maybe more on the front side thing. What was one of the more, what was one of maybe one of your favorite coach or players and, you know, coach, or, you know, it could have been a walk-on, it could have been a highly touted recruit. Who was one of maybe some of your favorite players looking back on your ECU career who you loved coaching and, you know, were ideal, you know, from top to bottom, you know, good students, you know, gave back to the community, worked hard, you know, things like that. Were there any, you know, players that you really like remember or, you know, had any that stick out?
No, there's too many. Yeah, I mean, 6 years, 120 guys a year. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed all the young men there. Mm-hmm. I was able to be around, and my staff was great. Had a great staff during that time. So I enjoyed coaching, and Been around all the young men I had there, Joseph.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure if I asked any one of them, they would say the same thing about you. And so it was the Carolina game where we won 71-42, but what was maybe one of your more exciting games being a East Carolina coach? What were some of maybe the top games you remember?
The first game of my coaching career there, and one of the last second Hail Mary pass. And that was big, and you know, wins the heart. I learned a long time ago to appreciate all wins. So we had a winning record there as a staff. Mm-hmm. So I really enjoyed all the wins. And I know a lot of people talk about in-state wins. I enjoyed those. But anytime we had a chance to win, and my best part was seeing the joy it brought the young men and the staff and myself, but especially the young men.
That's awesome. No, that's great to hear. And unfortunately, your time had to come to an end at East Carolina. I was not happy with that. Let the record show that. But you ended up in Charlottesville after that, and then as well Norman, Oklahoma with the Sooners. Tell me a little bit about those programs, just a little bit about how you ended up in Charlottesville and then with Norman, and in Oklahoma. Just, you know, a little bit about your time there.
I got fired on December the 5th. Mm-hmm. Bronco Mendenhall called me that night.
Yeah.
And I had a job at Virginia that night immediately.
That's awesome.
And while I was at Virginia with Bronco Mendenhall, I loved working with Bronco. Great man, outstanding coach. Mm-hmm. And while I was there, Lincoln Riley, who I had known since 19 and had hired him in East Carolina, he took over at OU and offered me a job there. And I accepted. And we had a chance to work with Lincoln for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came back to North Carolina to help take care of my dad, my brother. As the story knows, everybody knows that story, and I'm back here now. And I know, and then Coach Doran, Dave Doran, who I've known since he's 24, great man. I've been blessed to work with some great people.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
Dave is one of those great people, and I've known Dave for a long time. He offered me a position here on the staff, and I'm enjoying myself staying involved here and enjoying the kids here as well.
Mm-hmm. And, like you said, you've coached with some great people, and you've coached with some great programs and some great schools. And I can't wait to ask some more of these questions about, you know, what is something, you know, you learned from your coaching career that you wish maybe everyone could learn? Or is there something from your coaching career that you maybe think like everyone would, like you wish everyone could know about that, you know, brings you a lot of joy or excitement that, you know, not a lot of people maybe, you know about?
Well, I think you get into coaching for one reason. That's about the kids. Once you lose that, then you need to get out of coaching. I think the young men always have to be first. I think the competition part, competitive part of coaching is big, but just as big as being a dream merchant. I consider myself that, and that means helping other young people, young men, reach their dreams and goals. Those three things I would say would just be marvelous. The last thing I would say has been work with great people, where you get to go to work, or you got to go to work. And I think when you choose a job, make sure it's one you get to go to work, not that you have to go to work too.
Right. No, that's good. And it makes me, honestly, I came up with another question after hearing that. Is what was something maybe you told some incoming recruits or some players, you know, either that thought they were everything or thought that they could make it to, you know, was there something you always told, you know, your players that, and currently you may tell your players that, you know, as incoming freshmen, that, you know, they may have the mindset that they want to get to the league or they want to play in the NFL, but they have to work together ultimately to get there. Is there something you always tell them, or something, you know, maybe that you tell your players, you know, or recruits that, you know, try to instill that mindset?
I will work you harder than you ever been working your entire life. I'll make you have out of body experiences, but I will love you harder. Period. I'll work you hard than you ever been working in your life, and I'll make you have out of body experiences, but I'll love you harder than that.
That's awesome. And moving on to that, especially, you've had such a great, you know, continued coaching career. You've coached at some great schools. Is there something you would, you know, want to pass down, or, you know, something you would encourage the next generation of courage or of coaches to learn and educate themselves on, or, you know, something that they, you know, if there's a young coach looking, you know, listening to this, what's something that they should maybe, you know, educate themselves on?
This is my 42nd year of coaching. I'm still learning. It's called it's called lifelong learning. Continuous learning, continuous exploration, continuous jobs, schools, clinics, coaching schools, continue to learn as much as you possibly can. And always be yourself is the last thing. Be yourself, because you can fix yourself. Don't try to be something you're not.
Understand. Yeah. Understand that for sure. And especially that, would you probably instill that with the next generation coming up, not just, you know, football players, but, you know, this next generation of kids coming up in through, you know, growing up and growing, just the same motto, make sure you just continue to learn and educate yourself.
Everything I've talked about, Joseph, is it applies to life. Quality de la vida, quality of life. Everything I do applies to life. The trust, commitment, and caring that you ask about the program, I choose my circle with that. The lifelong learning, and not just football, I live my life like that. Being a dream merchant, I still consider myself that right now and always will. Lifelong learning and trying to find out information to be as best I can here for Coach Doran and staff. And a young man I work with now is everyday situation, every day, all day, trying to find information to help them become better. So that applies whether I'm in a business or in coaching. It just so happens I've been in coaching my entire life.
Absolutely. And to pivot even from that, you know, what's something – I mean, college football as a whole is a beast in itself, and it's, you know, it doesn't need any more – I mean, it's popular in itself, but what's something – maybe just because something is big doesn't mean there aren't things that can be changed or better. Is there anything as fans or, you know, people that you would want to see either, you know, changes about the game or, you know, things that fans or people outside of the game can help with, you know, the process of the game or anything like that?
Well, it's changing now. It's changed a lot. You know, 4 or 2 years, things change and you have to adapt if you want to be a part of it. I began coaching. There was no cell phones. There was no GPS. You had to get a map and learn where the schools are. Now we have transfer portal. We have different things, the NIL, all these things that are available. And they're not bad. I think they're anything that improves the game is good and it's great. So you just have learned to adapt. So I would say, you know, the fans are well needed. I think we found that out during COVID. And I think not only did we need the fans, but I think the fans needed us. Yeah. The athletic part of it. I thought that brought them back to some normalcy as well.
Absolutely. I think so too. And I think the fans plus the game, it just is a great equation. So moving a little bit away from game, we kind of talked about you came from family educators, my wife's teacher. Is there anything you know, outside of the game, away from it, you're passionate about? Anything you currently have going on or things that, you know, maybe you're doing outside of coaching that you're excited about that you want to shed some light on maybe?
My family is most important. My girls, my granddaughter, my wife, Erlene, my daughters, Olivia and Renata, my granddaughter, Isabella, my family, my dad and brothers, but also my boat, Time Out. That's my getaway. That's my space. That's awesome. My Time Out. So I love my boat. And around my family, I want to try to get out of my boat as soon as possible.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I understand that. Who doesn't love being on the water? Especially North Carolina water. It's beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
My wife's family's from Wilmington. So, like, we go down there and, like, around the Cape Carteret, around there.
That's okay. Where I grew up around the water. And so – so family and then being with my boat. I'm very simple.
I get that. You know, being such the wealth of knowledge that you are, I thought I was going to come in honestly into this interview, you know, thinking, hey, I'm going to talk to Coach Ruffin. This is going to be awesome. You know, there's probably, you know, some players that might listen to this, but that's not the message I'm coming away with. I want to educate myself even further. And I'm kind of taking away a different message that I came in with. And I want to ask you, who do you think maybe I should interview next, or someone I should interview to further educate myself and maybe continue, maybe talk about those values we both talked about and just kind of further, you know, grow myself as well as grow as other things that are important? I might have stumped Coach.
Well, you know, I got so many people.
Right.
And they have different, I categorize everything. Mm. And the question you ask, who should you talk to? You don't have a list long enough. You don't have that much time. there's a lot of, I wish my dad was able to talk. He'd be the next one. he's the one that taught me about having balance in your life. You know, I think that's a tough question. So I'm not sure who should interview next.
No, I
look at people I coached and, and interview one of those guys. They'll be able to tell you, you know.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And it's you mentioned your dad. My dad was one of the first people I wanted to interview just because, like you said, he taught me a lot of the things that I try to model my life after and, you know, try to, you know, emulate myself as a husband as well now. So I think we sit line up there for sure that I think father and those values would be cool. But is there anything, you know, you want to, you know, send a message out or anything you want to shed light on? We're kind of wrapping up here, but I want to make sure if there's anything that you know, are interested in or want to shed a light or talk about a little bit, we could, you know, we get to that and we discuss it.
No, just say what you're doing. Keep reaching out to everyone and getting the word out. And giving the chance for people to express their views and opinions. I like what you're trying to do and keep it up, you know. Absolutely. Keep on doing what you're doing. I mean, you know, life is short. Time is luck.
Yeah.
That's how you live it, you know. So live each day to the fullest. Keep working, man.
Yeah. And last question, and we don't have to dive in too much on it. We briefly talked about it. You and I actually had a mutual person, and Ymir Green, he unfortunately passed away. Is there anything, you know, that you saw in Ymir or anything that, you know, you would tell not him, but, you know, you would want us to carry on or, you know, talk about that, you know, would make Ymir proud maybe?
You know, everybody's somebody. You know, you got to be able to talk to kings and talk to common man. Those two things. And if you can do those two things, man, you got it made. But, you know, and until we all treat each other and understand that everybody's somebody, and we can dine with kings and also dine with common man, you know, that's the strive, you know, and that's the angle. And, you know, the golden rule, do unto others. As you want someone to do unto you. So, you know, those things, simple life, man.
Yeah.
You know, so.
No, and Coach, I can't thank you enough for joining me. As I mentioned, I was excited to talk to you. Like you said, I feel like I'm talking to a king right now because I'm dying to go talk to some of my friends and be like, you have no idea who I just talked to. Thank you so much for joining me. If there's nothing else, we can wrap up. I'll let you go back to your day. But, Coach, thank you so much for joining. I look forward to seeing you down in Greenville.
Take care, Joseph.
I'll say hey to you when you're down there.
I will. Nice talking to you, brother.
Nice talking to you, Coach. We'll see you.
Same here.
All right.
Yep.
Talk to
you. Okay.
Want to thank Coach McNeil again for joining me. That was awesome. I loved it. Tune in next week. We have a great episode with some friends of mine, some great minds. We have some great topics. He's actually, one of the guests is podcast famous already. You're going to have to tune in to find out. But with that, let's hit that outro.